Good afternoon, everyone. Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com. Law offices of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is April 15, 2010. We are holding a community conference call in which we answer community questions posted on forums.immigration.com. This call is being recorded. If you do not wish your voice to be recorded, please hang up. Remember, this is a publicly available phone call, so if you want to conceal your identity, that would be a good idea. If you ask a question, make up a name. There is no need to give your real name. Just because we are answering some questions does not mean there is an attorney-client relationship between us. You don't owe us anything, and we don't represent you. Until something in writing is signed between us, there is no representation. With that said, let me get started on the questions. I think we'll have enough questions today to last us about 35 to 40 minutes. We might have about 15 to 20 minutes left to do follow-up questions. First question is from KG Dubs. He's a permanent resident of the United States. He wants to go to a Caribbean medical school and wants to be there for 2 years on one of the islands. Is there a way which I can attend a school and not lose my permanent residency? Yes, of course. I think the best thing for you to do is, for your permanent residency, file form I-131. This is a form that gets you permission to stay away from USA for up to 2 years at one time. You have the option to keep returning as many times as you like, but you're not obligated to do so. And this is a fairly safe way to get your green card, keep your green card safe. Okay? A couple of things you need to remember. When you get an I-131, it does not protect your citizenship. So if possible, keep coming back to USA within 6 months each time, but definitely within 1 year so that you can preserve your citizenship purposes residency. Now, there's a lot more to it. You may want to get a lawyer for this, although it's something that I'm not sure that you really need a lawyer for. I think you have a good case, but you need to understand what you're doing, and you need to make sure that you understand the implications on citizenship. Okay. Next question is CKINNJ, EB3 to EB2. I have two A numbers in I-140 and 485. Trying to recapture priority date, but, okay. I-140 was approved, there was an A number. Then 485 was applied. There's a new A number on the 485. Okay, that is an error because it should be the same A number. Completed second graduate degree, switched job and employer. Okay, current position is product manager. Second employer also applied for perm. Perm approved in March. Employer 2 filed for I-140. They requested to recapture the priority date from the old case, but the priority date is still the same. So my questions are, can I get my previous priority date recaptured? By the way, if you can get the A number thing straightened out, things will become a lot easier because these days, USCIS is running their own checks on the system to make sure that they award you or assign you the earliest priority date to which you're entitled. They run their own scans, okay? But if the A numbers are not matching, that becomes problematic. I'm not sure what the problem with the A numbers is. Go ahead and get that corrected. That should be your focus. So the question is, can I get my previous priority date recaptured? You can. I would also suggest going through a congressman's office or first trying through the USCIS customer service, see if they can help you with this, both the A number problem as well as the recapture issue. Okay. Second, if can my employer file another I-140 based on the same labor? They can, but there is another way of doing it. You can file form I-824, although it should not be needed. So go to the congressman or the customer service first. And get both the priority date as well as the A number problem corrected through these two sources. If the above is not possible, is there any other way I can recapture my previous priority date? Like I said, form I-824 is one of them, but I think going through a congressional office should be better. in the suggestions you make, can you please let me know if I can work with USCIS directly or should I go through my lawyer only? No, I-140 is the employer's petition. It is the employer's petition. I-485 is yours. So, of course, as far as your 485 is concerned, you can ask USCIS whatever you want by yourself. Where the I-140 is concerned, either your lawyer or your employer has to help you talk with the USCIS. They will not or should not talk with you directly about the I-140. Next question is Singh SS. I have a quick question about when to file I-140. Currently, I'm on F-1 visa. 6 years of H-1B expired in Feb 2010. Couldn't apply for 7th-year extension because labor was not yet pending. Applied to MBA, got admission. Just last week, I got a call from the employer saying that PERM is approved. They are ready to file I-140. I'm not sure if it's the right thing to do when I'm on F-1. Could you please advise the best option? Well, definitely, filing an I-140 creates an immigrant intention, which becomes a problem if you travel outside USA for an F-1 visa stamping or try to get OPT, things like that, it could become a problem for. But unlike filing I-485, filing I-140 by itself does not create conflict with your F-1 without there being a travel element or an OPT element kind of thing involved. So the question number one is, should I go ahead with the I-140 filing and then employer can file 3-year H-1 extension? You can do that. You can do I-140 premium processing. Okay. Number two, if I choose above option, what happens to my F-1? You can go to school on H-1 also. Remember, you can also do an H-1 on a sliding scale. You can do an H-1 for 20 to 40 hours, depending upon your school schedule, so that the employer is obliged to pay you for 20 hours, but not the whole 40 if you have not worked 40. Okay. You can continue your studies on H-1. That would be a good way to go. Number three, should I ask employer to file H-1 extension and no I-140? I don't see any point in that. I would just go for the 3-year H-1 extension. Any other suggestions? As we were talking, I was making my suggestions. I think it's a good way to go for you to go ahead and get your H-1 extension for 3 years after the I-140 approval. Emi Helper wants to know, I had posted my EAD application to USCIS Texas. It has reached them on April 4th, but the check was not deposited. Should I resend my EAD documents? I would go through the frontline staff at the information or the customer service in USCIS, see what's going on, and see what they recommend. Okay. My EAD is expiring in July, and we have 114 days more to go. Do you think this is enough time to resend? It should be. Normally, they are doing it within 90 days. EADs, they are doing within 90 days normally. Okay, next question again from Emi Helper. I had applied I-485 RFE, not received any response. Should I follow up with USCIS? Yeah, no harm in that. I would probably go to the customer service. Only concern is when my priority date becomes current. I don't want to hear any questions from them. I don't think you can control the question, but you can certainly control your phone call to the customer service center. So my advice is go ahead and make that call. Next question, November 6, 2001, that's the name of the user, our community member. I become a U.S. citizen with an employment green card, willing to sponsor green card to my parents who are living in India. But the problem is I'm an adopted son, and the adoption was done when I was a small kid, and it was merely a family event and witnessed by extended family and friends. No legal document was produced. So if you want to apply for their green card, this is an interesting question. I do not know the answer off the top of my head about what to do when there is an adoptive parent, but the adoption was never legally completed. I would suggest first thing to do is to check on the laws of the country where you were born. If under the laws of the country you were born or in which the adoption occurred, if you are considered to be validly adopted under those laws, chances are USCIS will accept that as sufficient adoption so that you can apply for your parents or your adoptive parents. One thing I was curious about is when you file forms like G325A, where you have to put down the names of your parents, I'm hoping that you put down the names of your adoptive parents. That might make your life a little easier. But ultimately, this whole question focuses on one thing only. Is the adoption legal in the country that you were born in or you were adopted? So you need to look into that. And after that, there are things that I have not been able to discuss simply because I have not looked into them specifically. I know that there are processes like legitimation where, let's say somebody has an illegitimate child, but then they openly acknowledge them sometime later, they become their legal child for U.S. immigration purposes as well. So there may be some procedures available for adopted children that I haven't looked at. My suggestion would be to start with finding out what the laws in your country of adoption are, and if the adoption is considered to be legal there, and then use that as the springboard to next process. I also think that you would benefit from getting information from USCIS through a congressman's office. See what they suggest. Okay? Your question was also, shall we produce a letter now from a local town department where I was born in India? Would that be enough as a proof of relationship? If your adoption is, like I said, is considered legal, and you can prove that is considered legal by your home country, then I don't think there should be a problem. Okay? Next question is Green-DFW. I-485 for EB-11, biometric not received. I filed my 485 at USCIS. Approval obtained in EB-11 category. All my dependents got priority date March 2009. My priority date is December 2009. Should I pursue for correction? See, if you're in EB-1 category, right now priority dates are not a problem, as far as I remember. I don't think the priority dates of EB-1 is anything other than current. So, it's always a good idea to keep the record correct and accurate, but it should not, if you chose not to correct the record, I don't think it's going to be a problem, because EB-1 historically has been current for a long time. Okay? I have not received biometric notice for anyone of my family. They wanted me to wait. I tried service representative. They just gave me an SR number, and they said wait 45 days. I would have you go through a congressman's office as well. Should I take an info pass? Go through a congressman's office, see what they suggest. Okay? By the way, everybody that I'm recommending to go to congressman's office, if you don't know what to do, you can go to immigration.com, our main website, and probably just type congressman. Type congressman in the search box and do a search. You should be able to pull up one or two articles that describe to you how to contact your congressman's office and what you're supposed to do. It'll also give you links to find out who your congressman is. Should I take an info pass? Like I said, going to the congressman's office is the best way to go. Next question is Zozo. He says, reference my question from last conference call regarding if on 485, if you are without a job presently, can you get unemployment benefits? You had asked us to go under employee rights. I did not see anything for employment. Well, as far as I know, sir, unemployment for somebody who's on 485 AOS is not a problem, especially when they are in the AC-21 sort of situation. You see, unemployment becomes a problem for people like on H-1, because the moment you're out of status, you may not be authorized to take unemployment insurance benefits. At least that's the last thing I remember reading about this particular topic from USCIS. Okay, so getting unemployment insurance benefits, I don't think should be a problem, because this is not the kind of benefit which will get you exclusion or deportation problems. Okay, you're accepting unemployment on which is basically private insurance paid by your employer. If you're an AC-21 posture and you are changing jobs, I see no problem in taking unemployment. Okay, I hope this answers your question. I thought I had a very detailed article on this in my blog, but maybe not. Next question is Nitin Misra. Couple of questions on my recent perm denial. Yeah, you see, the notice was posted for fewer than 10 consecutive business days. In between, there was a federal holiday, but your employer does not consider that to be a holiday, so they were open. It's a very, very tough case for me to answer. I'll tell you, on the one hand, literally speaking, 10 business days would exclude all federal holidays. But on that particular federal holiday, your office was not closed and your employer does not consider it to be a holiday. Should your case be approved in appeal, I think it's a case of perhaps at a very rough estimate, a 50-50 chance, because I think you have a good argument in saying that when regulations talk about business days, they must mean employer's business days. So obviously, if the whole world was not closed, and let's say, just to take a very bad example, let's say my president died and my company was closed that day, even though it is not technically a federal holiday, but the office was closed, should that then be considered to be a part of the consecutive 10 consecutive days? And the answer is probably not. 10 business days obviously means business of the employer. It does not mean business of the whole country. In my hypothetical, the country was open, but I was closed. If it is the business of the country, then that particular day that I did not have the office open, that should not count towards the 10 consecutive days. Okay. So I think there's some argument here to be made, and you may have a chance on appeal. How much time is it taking for appeal to process? Time on our website, I don't recall, but it's definitely more than a year. Can I file, as I only have 1.5 years remaining on my H-1, can my employer file another labor for a different title and responsibility? Yes, they can. Different title and different job, they can. Okay. While the appeal is pending, they can file another job for you, but of course, going through another employer is much better. It is much better because logistically, when the same employer and the same employee combo is before firm, they will probably deny the second application. You will have to file a motion to reopen, basically explaining how these two jobs are different. So it gets a little bit more complicated if you do it through the same employer. If you do it through a future employer, on the other hand, it's very simple. Okay. As long as, of course, the job offer is genuine and your intention to join them is genuine. When do you join the future employer? This is a very weird situation. Let me explain to you the law. Let us say somebody does a green card through a future employer. That's an employer with whom you're not currently working, but intend to work sometime before or after approval of the green card. First of all, is this legal? Absolutely. It is legal as long as both the employer and the employee have the intention of taking and giving the job. Okay? So, this is legal. Let's say you process the form, you process the I-140, your priority date become current, you filed 485, you still haven't joined the sponsoring employer. You're not required to. Technically, you're required to join them only after the green card is approved. The 485 is approved, right? So, when you go through the future employer and the 485 has been pending 180 days after I-140 approval, there really is no requirement that you ever join them. You could ever even go for AC-21 and go to another similar job anywhere in the country. This is a weird situation. But the intention to join them must be in good faith and must remain all through the process, or at least at the time of the I-140 filing. Okay? So, when am I supposed to join the future employer? I just gave you that answer. You can join them, Nitin, whenever you like or never, depending upon the facts of your case. Next question. Rawcon321 wants to know green card, I-140 and 485 processing from India. Currently working on H-1B with company A, I have an approved labor, apply for I-140. Now I plan to go back to India for good. And I have the following question. Can the I-140 process continue in my absence? Yes. As long as you still have the intention of joining them back, even though you don't join them at all later on, like I just described, as long as you have the intention, the I-140 can be filed. Does myself, employer, or attorney need to resubmit any document during the I-140 processing after leaving U.S.? Well, if you're thinking of things like pay stubs and all, if you are not in USA, obviously your pay stubs in your home country have no relevance on the approval of the I-140. So chances of resubmittal being required are very small. Can the 485 be filed from India? No, sir. No, not at all. For 485, you have to be in USA in valid status. You cannot file 485 from outside USA. You can file consular processing, which is essentially the same process, but you cannot file 485 while being outside USA. Please suggest any guidelines, form submission things that I should be aware of before leaving US. Very, very important point, which I have made several times before in other conferences also. When a green card employee or a green card sponsored employee leaves the sponsoring employer midway between the green card process, a question can then be raised, does this green card application really exist anymore? Okay. If you have already left the employer, it is obvious that you are not working with them. Can we say that even though the green card sponsored employee has left the company intends to hire them back? And the answer is yes, you can say that, and as long as you say it truthfully. But remember also, USCIS could raise questions like, if this was a permanent job, then who is doing it? You obviously, previously he was working with you and you had given him the job and he was working on it. Now he's left, then who is doing the job? Does the job really survive? Okay, these are the kind of questions they can ask you. They haven't done that so far, but you know, just keep this in mind. So question number four basically is part of the same set of questions, which is if I file 485 from outside USA, and I just told you, you can't do that. Suppose in future, if I plan to come back to US to company A with approved I-485, approved I-140 or I-485 means you got your green card. Can I come directly to company A approved 485? Approved 485 means 485 means green card. And 485 can be filed only if you are in USA in valid status. If I come through company B on H-1B, can I move to company A on the pending 485 after 180 days? Sir, all of these questions I think depend upon whether or not you have valid 485 pending. If you have a valid 485 pending and your I-140 is approved, then you can join any employer in the country with a similar job and you don't have to start the green card process all over again. Okay? And by the way, once the I-140 is approved, the priority there becomes your property. It is yours to take to any employer for any job. This is the difference between AC-21 portability and just the priority date portability. In AC-21 portability, you've got to find a similar job. In priority date portability, any job is okay. The only time you don't get to inherit your priority date is if INS revokes the case. if INS revokes the I-140, okay? Even if the employer withdraws the I-140, your priority date should still be your property. COPU, who is the next community member, intend to revoke RFE from USCIS on my current approved H-1B. October 2009, I applied for H-1B extension premium processing, got approval within a week. In December 2009, I left that client location to a different client location. My employer did not apply for a new LCA. Folks, I've been saying this for many years. I'll say it again. A new LCA may be okay only if the H-1B employee will be working within normal commuting distance of an approved labor site. So if you have an LCA for, let's say, Arlington, Virginia, and you are working in Washington, D.C., there is no problem because this is normal commuting distance. Okay. But if the employee moves outside normal commuting distance and LCA alone is not sufficient, USCIS wants you to amend the H-1. Okay. So if you have moved outside normal commuting distance, H-1B must be amended. So to answer, first of all, or to bookmark, one of my concerns is an LCA may not be enough. If the movement of the employee is outside normal commuting distance of the approved LCA area, you should be filing an H-1B amendment. So USCIS is now planning to revoke your case because they did not find you working at the location for which you were approved. But remember the law as I told you. I'm reading the rest of your information. Remember the law as I told you. If you have moved outside normal commuting distance of the area for which the LCA was originally filed, then your H-1 should have been amended. And if they have not done that, then you are out of status. Okay, you are avoiding filing adjustment of status because you want to get married before. If they revoke the H-1, then what are my options? I want to wait 6 months to get married. Future spouse will be from India and should be able to maintain H-1B status in order to be able to bring her to USA on H-4 status. Okay, so how do I deal with the situation? Well, if your H-1 is revoked, the only choice I know is for you to file another H-1 to this employer or to another employer. And that should take care of your problem. Okay. Again, Zozo wants to know, have you heard of EAD or AP applications being rejected, denied, or RFEs on that? Yes, it can happen. Sometimes people forget a document or leave the form blank or the check bounces. Any of those things could cause you to have a denial of your EAD or AP application. Next question is H-1B thing. I spoke to you about my case in a previous conference call. The case was about concurrently filed 485, which is pending, and I-140, which is denied. Trying to interfile with the approved I-140. Prior date is not current. Now my 485 is denied also. I have some questions related to MTR. Should I file MTR appeal both? Well, first of all, I hope that you know that there is no appeal against a 485 denial. The appeal can only be against the I-140. And I hardly ever recommend a motion to reopen / reconsider. I always file appeal, or I should say I file appeal in most cases. The reason is, when you file an appeal, the case still goes back to the same officer who decided your case in the first place. They have 60 days to review the information that you have submitted in appeal. And if they feel that they made a mistake, they can take a step back and correct themselves. So instead of waiting a year, year and a half, or 2 years in appeal, you could get a decision as early as 60 days. Okay, so filing an appeal is better because it has within it the process of reconsideration / reopening. Okay. Right, and you already have noticed that the USCIS notice tells you to send the appeal to the service center and not to the AAO directly. That's fine. Number two, after the appeal of I-140, will 45 be automatically reopened? I have never filed a separate motion to reopen 485. We just file I-140 appeal, and if the appeal / motion to reconsider reopen is granted, then 45 is automatically reopened. Okay. That's the way we do it. I'm not sure if there's any other way of doing it, but if you want to, you could file a separate motion to reopen 485 as well. Number three, during the I-140 appeal process, can I apply for EAD, AP? No. No. The I-140 appeal does not give you the right to work, nor does it give you the right to stay in USA unless you have a separate H-1. Though I'm not planning to use them, I thought AP would be helpful if there is any H-1B visa stamping issue. Yeah, AP is always helpful because if they get you stuck for stamping, you could come back using a transfer. Can one use 45 benefits like AP when I-140 is under appeal? No. If your 45 is denied, your I-140 is denied, you have no right, as far as I know, to use any of the benefits under the 485, including advanced parole. Next question is EMGK H-1B visa stamping in India. He's done some work and he finds that there are a lot of cases for H-1 stamping which are being denied or at least put in administrative process. Are there any standard criteria? Does everybody have to go through administrative processing? What is my advice to people who have to go for visa stamping? Do you recommend traveling? Well, generally speaking, because H-1 visa stamping, and for that matter, any visa stamping in India and almost every country actually has become so difficult, if you can avoid travel, I think it's a good idea. If you can avoid travel, it's a good idea, but if you cannot, make sure that the information contained in the January 18th or January 8th memo, the USCIS memo about, who the employer is being the important, very important criterion for H-1. Make sure you've got access to a client, to the end client, and you can get letters from them if necessary. It still doesn't mean you have any guarantee of getting an expedited H-1. Consulate could still keep you stuck there for a long time, but I don't see any other option around it. So avoid travel if possible. If you do have to travel, it'd be great if you can have an AP as well, advanced parole. But if those two are not options, then make sure you have access to the end client so letters, etc., can be procured if you are working in a consulting position. Next question, Vishnu 2. My name is Vishnu, 6th year of H-1B visa. Previous employer filed PERM in August 2009. I don't know the status of that PERM. My previous company's lawyer says PERM is not withdrawn. My new employer will be filing my new PERM in May 2010, which is next month. 6 years of H-1B visa will expire in October 2010. My understanding is that I will be able to extend my current H-1B visa until October 2011 based on previous PERM. If you can get a screenshot of the previous PERM application, the answer is yes. As long as you can prove that the application is pending for 1 year and the burden of proof is yours, you should be able to get 1 year extension. If my previous PERM expires after 180 days, because previous company will not file I-140, yeah, you will not be able to get H-1 extension. If your PERM is approved and it stays, the I-140 is not filed for 180 days, INS will probably not give you an H-1 extension. Okay, but if you file, let's say today your PERM gets approved and you file tomorrow, under premium processing, the fact that your I-140 has not been filed should not be a problem. But if the 180 days have already gone by and I-140 is not filed, then that labor cert is gone. So INS is not likely to give you an H-1 extension on that. So questions are, would my 7th year H-1B extension that was obtained until October 2011 based upon previous PERM automatically expire in August 2010, the same month previous PERM expires? You know, the interesting thing is no, it should not. It should not. Once USCIS has given you an H-1 extension, they are not withdrawing them, even though the reason for the extension is gone. The reason for the extension, which is the form application, is gone. Okay? Once they've given you the extension, so far, I think technically they can take away the extension. I actually looked at the law very carefully. It looked like they had the right to do it. But as a practical matter, they don't do that. Once they have given you the extension, even if the perm is gone, you will keep the extension of the H-1. Can I get my... Okay. Should I be able to get my extension based upon my new perm after August 2010? Once the new perm has been pending 1 year, I believe, and there is some doubt here in this area because USCIS has never said definitively how they think about this. I think you should be able to get your extension. The gray area is, I know if my perm is filed within the first 6 years of my H-1, I can get approval of my H-1 extension past 6 years. But what if my second perm application is filed in 7th or 8th year? Do I still get H-1 extensions based upon the filing in the 7th or 8th year? I think you should be able to. Okay, but I've never seen USCIS comment one way or the other on this issue. Okay, that was Vishnu's question. Next question is Kavita K. I-9 problems. What had happened was she sent in her paper-based I-9 form, but the employer seems to not have filed it until April for almost 4 months. Kavitaji, the thing is, if an I-9 form is not properly prepared, I don't think that creates any problem for you. It creates a problem for the employer. Okay? Now, if you don't have work authorization, that's your problem, as well as the employer. But as far as purely I-9 issues are concerned, that's the employer's problem, not yours. So I don't see why you need to inform USCIS or do anything at all about it. I can't think of anything that you are required to do under the circumstances. You can try contacting USCIS customer support if you want to find out more information, generically speaking. But I doubt they can give you good or accurate information. Next question, my sis son. I came to B1, B2, changed to F1 and then H1, currently on 7th year of H1, never traveled to India since I got here. My question is, when I travel to India, do I return all the I-94s? The answer is yes. So if you have an I-94 for B1, another one for F1, another one for H1, typically what I do is have our clients keep copies of all the I-94s and surrender them all when leaving USA. Okay? I think that's your only question. You said you also have I-94 from 1999 when you entered USN B1, B2. Do I also return this? Yes. Return that as well, Neil. Next question is HIPPO 78. I'm a US citizen and so are my kids. Wife is currently an LPR. She's going to lose her green card because she's going to be staying outside for more than 1 year. Now, what should we do? Should we go to US consulate and return her green card and obtain a 10-year multiple entry visa? Well, the problem is when somebody has had a green card and they surrender it, consulates take two views. Some consulates are very easy going about giving them a tourist visa. Some other consulates create a big problem because they say, because you had a green card, you might become a green card holder again in the future, so we are not going to give you a tourist visa. So keep that in mind. Is there any other visa she qualifies for? H-1, L-1, depending upon, you know, what her circumstances are. Are there any precautions I should take from, apart from filing U.S. taxes? You must file U.S. taxes. You must. But that's, again, talk with the CPA. You are a U.S. citizen. You are really doing whatever you are doing to comply with tax laws. Immigration laws impose no burden on you. Okay. I trust that I've answered most of your questions. If not, I hope you're on the call and you can ask me any follow-ups you have. Next question is immigration talk. Traveling with expired I-94 and passport. Came to USA through Company A in May 2006, I-94 till June 2008. Moved to B in March 2008, got I-94 till Feb 2010. moved to Company C in March 2009 on portability. Petition not yet approved. My question is, can I travel to India through Company C receipt and come back to USA without any visa stamp? Well, you can never travel without visa stamp. You always need a visa stamp. And in your case, getting a visa stamp without an approval of Company C would be, in my view, impossible. Okay? Because you've not yet been approved for C, and you're no longer working for B or A. So you will have to wait until USCIS approves your case under Company C, and then travel and then apply for a visa. Okay? Keep in mind, the visa situation is kind of messy in most countries. Next question, Ram_Law. Currently in 6th year of H-1B, I was on 6th year of H-1B expiry as I moved from Company A. I have 257 days of vacation that can be recaptured. But I only got 173 days of recapture. Whatever you have not been able to recapture earlier, you can do so now. I've started perm process with Company B. They say it may take until June to get my application submitted. What are my options for 7th year extension? Can I reclaim my remaining 84 days? Why not? Why not? My lawyer says that my company must post my position job description. The company doesn't want to post salary details. Well, they have to post details, but what they can do is they can post a range. Check with your lawyers what the formula for the range is. Instead of saying we'll pay this employee $70,000, they can say $60,000 to $150,000, whatever that range is. Okay, but there are some rules about it. It's not a simple matter. Talk to your lawyers. Last question, and I think my estimate was pretty accurate. I thought we'll be done by about 2:40. Have about 20 minutes. Last question is about 2:42 now, so we'll have about 18 minutes to answer questions. I would like to ask the following questions regarding the change of job. This is from Let Get GC 2005. I have an EAD and H-1, approved I-140 and 45 is pending more than 90 days. I have a new job offer with same job profile and same client. Can I accept my new offer without losing the green card? Yes, of course. AC-21 process has been discussed in quite some detail on my blog. So just go to my blog on forums.immigration.com. You will find a lot of information on AC-21. Okay? Just go ahead and do that. I am in India. I'm worrying if I change my job and current employer revokes the I-140, then what will happen? If you have filed the AC-21 letter, revocation should not be a problem. I'm in India. PD is November 2001. Okay. Well, I've covered most of your questions. Again, I don't think there's anything left. Folks, I'm going to open the call for about 15 minutes of question answers, and then I will probably close this call. At this point, I'm inviting only those people to talk who have already posted questions. So follow-up questions only, please. Press *6 to speak with me. *6.
Hey, Rajiv. This is Santosh.
Hello, Santosh.
Yes, Rajiv, I was asking about filing I-140 now that I am doing MBA in F-1 status, but employer wants to do I-140. It seemed like you are saying, go ahead and do that. There is no problem with my completion of MBA. This is 1 year executive MBA. So my question was, should I go ahead and ask him to file my I-140, or should I ask him to just wait till my 1 year of labor filing date is over, so we can just shoot one thing at a time, just file 1 year extension for H-1 in August.
As long as your labor cert is not going to expire in that time, right?
In fact, March 25th is what he said the labor was approved. So it is valid till September 25th. And I think my labor was filed last year on 24th. So as long as he files a few days before this 6 month period, I think it should be all right.
It should be all right. And if you want to go with getting H-1 approval for 1 year first and then applying I-140, that's fine too. I find nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Good luck to you. Folks, anybody
Hi,
else?
Rajiv.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Mine is the second question in the forum, CK and NJ. You said one other option is to go through my congressman.
Hang on one second. What was your question about?
Having two A members and trying to recap.
Oh, yes, I remember now.
Right. I know my lawyer has already emailed the Texas Service Center. That's where my application is.
Right.
They've already emailed my Texas Service Center with my previous 140 and 485. She's also faxed the fact that I have two A members. And I recently also talked to one of the officers who gave me a fax number. My question is, you said it can go to a congressman. So, again, should that be the lawyer should go to the congressman, or I can take this?
No. Congressman will not speak. Congressman's office will not speak with lawyers. They will only speak with their own constituents, which is you.
Okay. So I can go to my who is representing my constituent, state,
yeah.
And then I can go to the senator or the congressman. So that is okay because this is a 140 case.
Right. The only thing is, if because it's a 140 case, it may be a good idea, or the congressman's office may ask you to get your employer involved, which is all right too. Okay. One quick correction: everybody is a congressman, but under congressman category, you've got two people: member of House of Representatives and senator. And you can go to either member of House of Representatives or senator, either one.
Okay. When you say you get my employer involved, what kind of an involvement?
Well, typically they'll require something in writing, some permission or something in writing from the employer to communicate on their behalf to USCIS.
Okay. I also searched on your website, since you mentioned that before. I wasn't very successful in getting any kind of documentation or notes.
Give me one second. Let me run a search for you. I'm pretty sure it pulls up, but let me just double check for you. Okay, I'm doing a search for CONGRESSMAN, Congressman. Running the search. Let's see. Contact your congressman. See this page. Your very first search result says family-based green card. It's a comment. Click on it. If you click on it, and you go to the comment. Yeah, just go on all the way down. Just do a browser search for congressman, the word congressman. When you come to that page, it's not there.
It's not there.
Yeah, it's not there. But it's showing up in the main search. That's weird.
Yeah.
But I know that page is there. It's not very complicated. It should be other. Hang on one second. Okay, then I'm dealing with number 3 page from the top. I'm going to number 3 page from the top. Yeah, that's right there. If you go to the number 3 item in the search, it takes you to that page. How to contact your congressman, how to find out who your HR is, how to find out who your senator is. Yes, the number 3 entry from the top in the search is that page that I'm referring to.
Okay, do you mind posting that on one of your forums or links?
I will do that. You can also do this. You can send me a request for that page on how to contact your congressman. Just send me an email through the contact us form.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
And one other question is, you mentioned that my employer can file another 140, but before they do that, I can try the congressman. So. Answer to this question is, they can file another 140 for the same job using the
But even better, they can do an I-824. But none of that should be necessary. INS has said so themselves.
Did you say 824? I-824. I just checked the form while we were on the discussing, and that is to get a copy of the approved voters.
Well, it is not strictly that. It is a form that says request for action on an approved petition. So the idea is, my petition is already approved, but I want some more action. In this case, you want a priority date.
Okay.
Okay. So that's what we had already been using traditionally But then USCIS said, you don't really need to spend time and money on this. We will collect it only based upon a letter. And in any case, we are doing our system scan and awarding you the earliest available priority date for you anyway.
They themselves are giving the priority date.
Yeah, voluntarily giving it. So therefore, we no longer file 824s. But because you have this discrepancy in A number that concerns me, it could be corrected. It should be a simple enough matter. They can link the A numbers, and then it takes care of all the problems.
Yeah, I just mentioned that to the officer who I spoke to just before this call, and he said, mention the A number in the letter, and I will see what I can do. So I don't know.
Yeah, basically they link the numbers. They basically, I guess what they have is some sort of a database field that they connect the two, so that when you search one, the other one pulls up automatically. That way, when they do a system scan for the earliest available priority date, it will scan both A numbers. That's my understanding of the way it works.
Okay. Looks like there are multiple fax numbers to the Texas Service Center. Is there a way that you have somewhere in your forum or you have it ready and available for us to do the fax?
We are ourselves going through, in most cases, either through ALA, American Immigration Lawyers Association, or we go through the Customer Service Center, Customer Service of the USCIS.
What is the first one you said, ALA?
American Immigration Lawyers Association. You can't do that because you're not a member.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
You're welcome. Good luck to you. Okay,
hi.
Anybody else?
Hi, this is Rajiv. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Please. Yeah, go ahead, please. One by one.
Okay. Yes, my name is Ali, and I am calling on behalf of my brother.
Yes, sir.
He has received his H-1.
Ali sahab, I'm going to ask you to hold for a second. You have not posted your question, have you?
Correct. No.
Okay, I will answer your question, but let me answer those people who have posted questions already. Hang
okay.
tight.
Hi, this is H-1B Singh.
H-1B Singh, go ahead, ma'am.
Yes, this is related to the I-140 appeal.
Mm-hmm.
The I-140 was denied and the 485 was denied. We're going to appeal the
Right. And I told you that you can't appeal 485, but you can, of course,
yes.
appeal. Right.
I want to find out if once we apply for 140 appeal and the case is successfully reopened, can AC-21 portability be used to change employer?
Absolutely. Because once the I-140 is approved in appeal, it is as good as being approved without the appeal.
No, only if the appeal not approved, like they open the case.
No, just opening doesn't do anything.
Okay.
You know, in other words, I'm a little confused. There is no such term as opening. What the idea is, once the appeal is filed, one of the two things will happen. Three things can happen. If the case is approved, I-140 is approved, then of course you can do AC-21.
Yes.
But until the case is approved in appeal, you have nothing. Nothing that you can port
nothing,
to.
Nothing, yes.
From. Right.
Okay. All right, that's all.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Good.
Here I go.
Yeah, sir, just go ahead. One of you go ahead.
Question number 19. So I was wondering...
just remind me of the question. I don't have the numbering. I use a different format than you guys.
Okay, so I'm basically a U.S. citizen, and my wife is out of the country for...
I remember your question. Go ahead, sir. Yeah.
So you said, the foreign consulates may view it differently.
Yeah, they view it differently many times. But remember, you always have the option of doing a K-3 visa for her if push comes to shove.
So what does that mean?
K-3 visa is spouse of a U.S. citizen.
Okay. So basically, as I mentioned, I mean, our intent for the next couple of years would be to travel to this country whenever we want.
Normally, sir, they should give her a tourist visa at least. But if they don't, then you can always get a K-3 for
her. K-3 visa, okay. And you also mentioned that, there's no binding on me as far as the immigration laws are concerned, right?
Immigration laws do not. It used to be, if I remember correctly, a few years ago, the law used to be, even after getting naturalized, you were bound to stay in U.S., say, for a certain number of years. But that law has long since been taken away because Congress felt that that law was discriminatory. Once you are a naturalized citizen, you have all the rights of a U.S.-born citizen except the right to run for president.
Okay.
So, naturalized citizens enjoy every right that natural-born U.S. citizens do, including the right not to stay in USA.
I see. Okay. All right. So, I mean, if I have to file a K3 visa, I mean, do I need the services of an attorney, or is it something that I can do?
No, you don't really need a lawyer for that.
If you have
money to burn, I'll take it from you. But really, honestly speaking, there really is no need. K3 visa is a simple application. You can go to the INS website, read up the law a little bit.
I see.
Even easier, just go to the U.S. consulate and ask them to help you. Remember, the way U.S. consulates treat U.S. citizens and the way they treat non-citizens is very different. So when you go to U.S. consulate and, as a citizen, your reception is very different.
Okay.
Okay. They'll bring you a cup of tea, maybe, and then help you with the forms. Just go there and say, look, I want to get my wife into USA. What do I do?
Oh, I see. Okay. Because we have had different sort of experiences when we come here as student or an H-1B.
Well, that's different. They treat you like, I don't want to say the word online, but they treat you like excrement. But when you go as a U.S. citizen, they treat you like favorite son-in-law.
I see. All right. And do you think it's a good idea for me to register at the foreign consulate, I mean U.S. consulate, that I'm staying outside the country?
There is no, I don't know if there's any such, registration is often advised, but you're not staying in a disturbed country or anything. Where are you staying?
In India.
Yeah, my registering is not a bad idea. I don't even know what the procedure or the process is. I don't see any problem doing it. Especially if you were going to, in a disturbed country where there were bombings every third day, yeah, definitely I would want you to register. But if you're going to India, chances of you, I shouldn't say that, bite my tongue when I say that, you never know what's going to happen. Do register, it doesn't hurt you. Why not?
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you. I appreciate your thoughts.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Hi, Rajesh.
Yes, sir.
This is Rock On question number 11. Regarding the green card processing of I-140 and 485 after leaving U.S.
Right.
So, suppose the 140 is, right now my 140 application is pending, and assuming it's approved after I leave U.S., can I still use the priority date given if my employer probably revokes it after time after I leave?
Yes, sir. You can.
Okay.
If you abandon your process after I-140 approval.
Mm-hmm.
You still carry your priority date with you even if the employer revokes the case. The only time you don't get to keep the priority date is when INS revokes the case.
Okay. And how is the possibility? Usually they do that after going through our application if they find any discrepancy of that.
I have seen two circumstances. One, where the company stopped doing business.
Okay.
And two, if they discover any fraud in the application, or they discover something irregular. For example, you had a three-year bachelor's degree and they gave you master's degree evaluation.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. Or they gave you EB-2 incorrectly.
Right. Okay. And my next question is, if I'm leaving now, how about if the dates become current and 140 is approved? Can I file the I-485 from India?
No, sir. 485 can only be filed if you are in U.S.
So how does the process proceed then?
Consular processing. What happens is, if let's say you are working outside USA and your I-140 got approved and your PD became current.
Right.
If you have made the proper indications on the I-140, then your file will be sent to National Visa Center.
Right.
Okay, in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Who will then send a bunch of forms to you. You will then sign and send them back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be scheduled for an interview in the consulate closest to your home.
Oh, okay. And when does this happen, Ravi?
I'm sorry?
When does this happen? This happens after...
It happens only after your PD becomes current.
Okay. So with the approved 140 and with all the documentation that you mentioned about...
When you file the I-140, if you indicate that I'm going to go for consular processing, they will automatically forward... USCIS will automatically forward the file to... for the visa.
No, but the thing is, now that didn't happen, right? Because right now I'm in U.S. and the 140 is filed already and there was no mention that
You can even later on convert any case to consular processing by filing form
I-824.
And if the case is still pending, you can amend the I-140 in all probability and ask INS to convert it to consular processing.
Okay, so... During the 140, we can mention that and we can get that change to 824 and from there on...
You don't need to file an 824 if you are amending the I-140.
Right, okay. No, but I think that won't happen. I probably would wait until the 140 is approved because I heard...
Then it can be done later.
Right.
Actually, there is another process called attorney-certified 140s. It's an unpopular process. I would not depend upon it. It circumvents the need to file an 824. In your case, priority dates are probably so far away.
Right.
Filing an I-824 in the interim doesn't hurt you.
Right. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Hey, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Santosh again. I basically spoke to you earlier about when to file I-140, and everything looked good from my side, but I spoke to my employer just now, and the kind of feeling I'm getting is he wants me to come back on H-1 and he wants me to take the job for which
you are on MBA, Santosh, right?
Correct. I am doing MBA.
Yeah. I mentioned this earlier in my conversation that you could go to school on H-1. As well as work.
Okay, so in that case, should I agree with him to file I-140 as soon as he wants? And
absolutely.
Look,
Santosh, capturing your priority date is extremely important.
Okay.
And if you have to go on to H-1 and do your MBA part-time or even full-time, you can go to school full-time on H-1. That's no problem.
Okay. Okay.
I would, from a personal perspective, I would go for the I-140 processing as early as possible.
And nowadays, as you were mentioning, do it premium processing, but just now my employer's immigration department person said, hey, we are getting I-140 approved in just 1 month. You don't need anything. So in 1 month, he wants me to come back on H-1 and start working part-time or full-time, depending upon how I want to take this MBA.
Okay.
So there is no problem with me doing that, coming back immediately to F2S in next 1 month or so.
I don't see any problem, but I would still do I-140 premium processing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck, sir. Anybody else? Folks, or should I go with Mr. Ali? Ali Saab, go ahead, please.
Yes. Actually, I am calling on behalf of my brother who has applied for... I apologize.
Nope.
I'm calling on behalf of my brother. He has applied for H-1 in 2008 quota.
Mm-hmm.
And he has received his approval, not applied for the visa.
Mm-hmm.
Because of some situation at home, he was unable to come.
Mm-hmm.
But now he wants to come, but because of the rules, all the rules have been changed, so we are not sure.
Ali Saab, there is nothing in law that says he cannot apply for a visa as long as the petition is still alive. So if he got it in 2008, it was probably good till 2011. Now, the problem is, when he goes for the visa stamping, he's going to be grilled very, very closely on how is it that his employer, who's supposed to need his services, is willing to wait for him 2 years to join. Okay?
Correct.
If the job is at a client site, it becomes even more problematic. They'll say, well, how can the client wait? Okay?
Correct.
Who's doing this job? Why are they waiting? Get letters from clients. Do this, do that. As long as he's willing to go through the hoops and he has a good explanation why he couldn't join in 2008, I don't see any problem going for the visa stamp.
But what could be the other option? Can he start a new H-1 or is the same?
Absolutely.
Thing?
He can start an H-1. Right now the quota is open. He can start it as a new H-1. Or
uh-huh.
even use, if he for some reason gets stuck in the quota problem, he can use the remaining part of the H-1.
The one he already has it, right?
Yes, he can get another employer to get an H-1 approval for one.
No, I mean, my question is, if he apply for a new visa, or if he uses the visa he already has, does he have to go through the same questioning in both cases or not?
No, in the second case, his questioning will be the same as would be for any normal H-1 employee.
Okay.
In the first case, if he goes with the current employer's H-1, his questioning will be tighter from one aspect, that why is the employer willing to wait?
So what I can get from the employer is to, fulfill the need for the visa.
Mr. Ali, I always tell people nothing but the truth. Whatever the true state of affairs is, why is the employer willing to wait? Talk to their lawyers. Talk to the lawyers who process the H-1. See what their thoughts on this are. If they feel there is a good case to be made, then go ahead. But don't prevaricate. Don't make up things, okay?
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck to you. Folks, anybody else? Well, thank you for being here. Good talking with all of you, and I will see you a couple of weeks and on a Thursday. Bye-bye.